This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
Six.
When the clock struck six, it meant one thing.
I'm one of the greatest broadcasters on planet Earth.
And I know that's hearsay here. It's
not hearsay, it's not heresy. Hearsay.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
No. Peter is not here today. Andrew Gunling is not here today. So, you're all stuck with me, unfortunately. I am Anthony Pusick. And this portion of the Michael K. Show, ENN, is brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer. 100 calories, 1 gram sugar, 5% alcohol, and 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company. Please drink responsibly. Probably a big day for Truly yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Independence Day.
Absolutely. Now, we always start by asking everybody how they're doing. So, there are some good drops here for you, Dan. Mm-hmm. Michael, how are you?
Oh, you would take Gross because you want to make out with him.
And Don, how are you?
I think Dan Gross is a very attractive guy.
Do you know anything about this?
Am I a very attractive guy? What am I going to argue and
well,
say no?
Well, no, not that. The what makes Michael so upset is you and Don being best friends.
Oh, yeah. I've heard rumblings about that. Yeah. I don't know why he gets so fired up over that, though. Like, it's not like anything, you know, like we're out to do anything to spite him or to hurt him. You can have friends, right? I have friends that are in the business. I have friends that are outside the business. It just so happens that Don and I, being friends, we kind of move in the same circles professionally, and we know a lot of the same people, Michael being one of them here. So I don't know why that would necessarily ruffle his feathers as much as it apparently does.
Well, the KPHO relationship is a point of contention for Don. The Dan and Don relationship is a point of contention for Michael. And it continues. And I'm sure...
So there's always something.
I'm sure we'll be hearing about it tomorrow. But there always is something. And if you were watching yesterday, Dan, mm-hmm. there was a Subway Series, of course, in the Bronx. And it was the lovely split doubleheader seven-inning affairs that we love so much on the 4th of July. And the first game looked like it was going well for the Yankees. 5-4 lead. In comes Aroldis Chapman. And it's gone. 10-5 loss, and they salvaged, the Yankees did, the weekend, or at least Sunday, with a victory in Game 2. But, of course, now losing 2 out of 3 to the Mets, heading to the West Coast to play the Mariners. We talked about it before, Aaron Boone, talking about the importance of this week for the Yankees.
Yes. I think we understand what's at stake, and I think we understand what the hole we've dug for ourselves, and we understand the importance of every game, and we got to go play well. We understand that. We've talked about it a lot, so we're going out west with a lot on the line.
42-41, 10 games back in the AL East. Fourth in the division, only ahead of the Baltimore Orioles. And I think, Dan, at this point, you have to just start talking about the wild card. And even then, that's a 5.5 game deficit. Seattle is ahead of them. Toronto's ahead of them. Cleveland's ahead of them. The Angels are actually tied with them. And, of course, you have the Rays and the A's that are actually in those two spots. Buster Olney was on Greeny earlier, which was hosted mm-hmm. by Chris Carlin, that you could hear here on 98.7 ESPN. All week, and he said that these next 2 weeks, pretty big for the Yankees.
When you look at the schedule ahead of them, you know, they play Seattle for 3 games, and the Mariners have been playing well lately. They've actually passed the Yankees in the American League standings. Then they play the Astros, and then 8 of their first 10 games out of the All-Star break are against the Boston Red Sox, a team they haven't beaten yet this year. And so while, you know, Hal Steinbrenner said last week in speaking with reporters that has no thought at all about being sellers, we might get to the morning of July 26th, that Monday after the second Red Sox series, and there'd be no question that they would be sellers. I mean, when you look at their deficit of 10 games right now, there's only been one time in their entire history when they've overcome that to win a division or league, and that was in 1978. So they've run out of, you know, as I said on the broadcast last night, they've run out of lifeline.
Yeah, I think the lifelines ran out about a week ago, but everybody yeah. seems to think that there's still a chance that this team can turn it around, but nobody's coming to save them. This is the team unless a trade is made. There aren't many guys left that could come back. Corey Kluber, of course, could come back. Zach Britton on the IL again. He can come back. But if Aroldis Chapman can't close games, and Gerrit Cole is not Houston Astros Gerrit Cole, this Yankees team is not going to make up this ground, and they don't have a lot of time to do it.
No, you're right about that. And forget about the standings and the way that everything is situated with, you know, wild card and division. When I look at the American League, this is, again, just on paper, these teams that I have watched all season long as an astute observer and fan of Major League Baseball. If I'm doing the power rankings in no particular order, I have the Yankees no better than sixth. Okay? I think in their own division, Boston and Tampa are better. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that they could be a better team than the Toronto Blue Jays, right?
Yes.
Because I still don't love this Blue Jay team. Their bullpen is horrific. I mean, Toronto's bullpen in terms of ineptitude is the same as what the Philadelphia Phillies bullpen is over in the NL East. Chicago, they were my pick to go to the World Series out of the American League at the beginning of the season. The White Sox, they're better than the Yankees. And then in the West, you got to say Houston and Oakland are right now. So that being said, that to me does not scream, hey, you're making the playoffs. There's a shot. You're not dead and buried yet. But I like that clip that we've heard a lot this afternoon during the commercials. What was it from Passan, who was on the air, when he was like, well, if you played 70 games already, and that was when it was 70 games, now we're talking about 80 already. If this is what you are, this is what you are.
Yeah, and as everybody has said, and as Passan has said, it's probably not changing. And we could talk about competitive at-bats. We can talk about, you know, just swinging the bats better, or it looks like it's better. Well, yes, Gary Sanchez has looked better. Aaron Judge has been fairly consistent throughout the season. Gio Urshela has had some moments, but DJ LeMahieu has underperformed. Clint Frazier's an under 200 hitter. And as you pointed out, Dan, Brett Gardner was not meant to play 70 games all season, let alone 70 games before the All-Star break. So that is where this team is right now. And heading out to Seattle, you have to say, oh, you got to take 2 out of 3 from Seattle. You have to take 2 out of 3 from Houston. But we've been saying that for weeks now, that the Yankees need to take 2 out of 3 in each series they play. And they've been lucky to get one. And again, you're going to have Gerrit Cole on the mound again before the All-Star break. How is he going to look? And if he looks, you know, questionable again, you really have to question what they can do even to get back into the wild card, as you've said.
Well, and think about the magnitude of the start, right? In the sense that his last two, Boston, which every game the Yankees play against the Red Sox is going to be measured. And he goes up into Fenway Park. They hit 2 home runs off him in the first inning, right? They hit him around pretty good. Then he goes and he pitches against the Mets. He can't even get through 4 innings. So Red Sox, Mets. And now his third start, when things seem to be teetering out of control a little bit, only happens to be in the place where he used to call home, in the place where a lot of people started to get these suspicions that maybe he was doing some things that made him a little supernatural when it came to spin rates and so on and so forth. I'll tell you, if he goes out there and has another clunker against the Astros, which would be on Friday night, boy, that is going to be a rough week in between outings for Gerrit Cole heading into. Imagine what kind of questions he's going to get from the national media out at the All-Star game in Colorado. Think about that, Anthony.
Yeah, no. I mean, look, Cole and Chapman could both go out to Colorado and it could look very bad. The ball flies out of that ballpark and Chapman seemingly can't locate his fastball, and every slider is down and easily hittable. Pete Alonso showed you that yesterday. And two guys that, and I don't want to say Cole because it's only been a couple of starts, that don't deserve to be an All-Star. Aroldis Chapman over the last month has certainly shown that he has regressed. And of course, his play from probably about the last month has shown not All-Star potential. But you know what, Dan? We haven't talked about it all day, and it's a shame that we forgot about greatness yesterday.
Rick the one and future champion of the world. The boy king who has risen to the throne and who will not step down. Luke on his works, he mighty and despair. For he has surpassed the kings of Egypt with 76 Nathan's hot dogs and bombs. A new world
the goat of competitive eating, Joey Chestnut, 76 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes. You heard the call there on ESPN. And even though it's a little more normal than last year, where they had it in some abandoned warehouse in an unknown location.
That was like a Liam Neeson hostage movie or something in that warehouse last year.
Which was borderline uncomfortable, but I guess
creepy.
I guess about five blocks away from Nathan's at Maimonides Park, where the Cyclones play in front of 5,000 people, gives it a little more juice. And of course, after, Joey Chestnut spoke with ESPN's Jason Fitz.
Joey, you talked about the crowd and how you thought it might give you some momentum. How did they help you today?
Oh, it felt great. They're chanting, and I started slowing down that minute six, and they kept pushing me. They didn't give up on me, and thank you. I'm so happy.
I saw you look out at the crowd at one point when you were slowing down. How did it help you speed up at the end?
It just felt good, and even if I was uncomfortable, having everybody cheering me and pushing me, it made me feel good, and let me keep going.
Uncomfortable is a word. Look, I don't know how for an athlete. I guess I'd have to ask Chris or Rick how it feels to be cheered on by fans and what that does for you.
Yes,
on the field when you're scarfing down hot dogs. I mm-hmm. don't know how much the crowd helps you. I'm sure because it is a competition that it does do something, but at some point your body just has to say what you're doing is not healthy.
Well, let me ask it to you this way. When you go to a restaurant, when you go out to eat, do you prefer a loud, raucous environment while you're trying to enjoy your food? Not if it's like a hangout type of place, but if you're actually going for like a quality meal and you want to savor every morsel you're putting into your mouth, like, do you want a lot of noise? Do you want a lot of ruckus, or you just want a nice, like, chill, relaxed environment?
I think you're probably expecting a nice, relaxing dinner.
Right.
Depending on the place you go. Right. So I think you'd probably want more silence than anything else.
But this is not that, though.
No.
This is, I mean, you know what you're getting yourself into. And I tweeted this out yesterday, and I'm a huge tennis fan. Joey Chestnut is to Coney Island what Rafael Nadal is to Paris in the French Open. Like, Rafael Nadal's won 14 French Opens or 13 French Opens. He's the king of clay. He dominates that tournament. This is Joey Chestnut's house. Coney Island, Nathan's, right? They're synonymous with one another. And I don't know. What did you think about the whole, like, stage in the ballpark on the pitcher's mound?
I didn't hate it. I mean, again, anything is an upgrade from what we saw last year.
Right.
And ESPN did a great job covering it, but where that was and what that was, I'm not quite sure. I liked it just because, of course, I've been to that ballpark a bunch, being from Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's a good place.
And I thought it was really cool. And for anybody that hasn't been there, like I said, Nathan's is only a couple of blocks away. So it's a staple just as much as Nathan's is. You know where you are. You see the Cyclone in the background in left field. I thought it was cool, and I wouldn't be opposed to them doing that all the time. I'm sure that people of Coney Island would prefer if the entire Surf Ave wasn't closed down for the hot dog eating contest every July 4th. No, it was fun.
Do you know that I have a connection to that ballpark? Did you know that?
How is that?
There is part of me in that ballpark.
I'm sorry?
A couple of years ago, we haven't done it in a couple of years. There was nothing, of course, last year. SNY, we would play our kind of like group employee company softball game, if you will. And
okay.
We would do it there in Brooklyn at the Brooklyn Cyclones. So in the 2019 edition, I made, and I'm not, you know, I don't think I'm telling tales out of school. I made probably the play of the afternoon. I was playing the outfield and I charged in for a fly ball, dove head first for it, made the play, tumbled along the way, but as I did, you know how that's kind of not grass, it's not like turf, it's kind of that synthetic surface?
Yes.
Well, needless to say, I scraped up my arm pretty darn good while I was making the play, because you got to make the play. You got to lay it all out there to make the play. So there are parts of my arm, my skin, that are buried beneath that synthetic surface somewhere out in, I would say, like left field someplace. I don't know if they are still there, if they're just part of the fabric, but I always, you know, I think from here on out, I am tied and connected to that stadium from now till the end of time.
Etched in history with the High A Mets affiliate.
Absolutely.
Is Dan
Grazza. And I made the play.
And you made the play. Which is mm-hmm. which is even more important and an inspiration to all those to all those mini Mets. I think it's Baby Bombers, mini Mets. I think that's what we've
yes.
kind of agreed on.
Absolutely.
And
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And of course, Dan, I know you. We talk about it all the time. You mentioned tennis.
Yes.
And Wimbledon's going on. And of course, it started, sadly, last week with so many people slipping. And of course, one of them being Serena Williams having to retire in her first round matchup due to the slipperiness of the grass at Wimbledon. But there are still some heavy hitters on the men's side. And today, Novak Djokovic reached his 50th Grand Slam quarterfinal. It's his 12th quarterfinal berth at Wimbledon. He beat Christian Garin 6-2, 6-4, 6-2 earlier today. Djokovic is the fifth player to reach 50 Grand Slam quarterfinals. He joined Chris Evert, Serena Williams, Martina Navratilova, and I'm sure you can guess, Dan, who the other one is and why I haven't mentioned him yet.
Oh, because he is also someone who qualified for the quarterfinals. That would be the GOAT himself, Mr. Federer.
And the reason I have to leave him last is because this is his 58th time. So, of course, he has the most after his straight set victory today, which was, of course, delayed a little bit by rain. It wasn't a great day at Wimbledon weather-wise. And I think, actually, some of the matches were suspended until tomorrow. So the whole quarters have not been settled just yet. But also, with the victory today, he's now the oldest man to reach the quarters at Wimbledon at the age of 39. Dan, Djokovic, obviously, I would imagine, is the favorite going into this. But if Federer gets deep into Wimbledon, you have to be scared if anybody's facing him.
Well, I think this is, I mean, we're already now in deep territory, right? When you're in the final eight, the quarterfinals, you're, you know, two wins away from getting a Sunday morning, which is, you know, the final. And like you said, barring an upset, the way the draw is kind of opened up right now, I think the path has gotten even a little bit easier for Djokovic, so to speak, because, you know, one of the guys in his half of the draw that potentially could have picked him off, the guy who was in that other quarter, was Stefano Tsitsipas, the guy that he beat in the French Open final in the thriller when he came back from two sets down against Tsitsipas.
Tremendous
to beat
name.
Him.
Tremendous
right.
name.
Tsitsipas, who's going to win Grand Slams, many of them throughout his career, still very young, but he lost in the first round of Wimbledon to Francis Tiafoe, the American from Maryland. So, with Tsitsipas out of there, I don't really see a big enough challenger to knock out Djokovic before the final, so he'll probably get to the final. But if Federer, you know, the draw's kind of opening up kind of decently for him as well, and his form is getting a little bit better as this tournament has gone on, we might be headed for what would be, let's see, like either our third or fourth Djokovic-Federer-Wimbledon final. People may or may not remember the epic, the thriller. It was the same day our buddy Ty Butler was getting married, as a matter of fact, his wedding day in 2019.
That's a big day.
That Federer-Djokovic final from 2019 in Wimbledon was an epic, and Federer had the match on his racket. He was up 8-7, 40-15, two match points, and couldn't close it out against Djokovic. It's one that still probably haunts him and, you know, changed the complexion a little bit about this all-time Grand Slam race. But this is always going to be the slam on grass at Wimbledon, where he's won it eight times. That's still going to be his best shot to get another slam because the surface is conducive to his skills. I don't know, Anthony, we're two wins away for each of these guys to meeting again on Sunday morning. And I'll tell you what, that would be spectacular.
And unfortunately, I haven't mentioned Americans yet because, well, the American tennis scene right now is done. And in women's action, which is where we had a shot, it was Coco Gauff and 23rd seeded Madison Keys, and both were eliminated in the fourth round. And yeah. Coco Gauff, again, like you said, Dan, with Tsitsipas, a lot of people, plenty more chances for her at the age of 17 to find herself deep in Grand Slams.
Yeah, and Coco, this was and Wimbledon 2 years ago in 2019, that was her like coming out moment. You know, she made the fourth round, a couple of upsets along the way, and ironically, her journey ends again in the fourth round today. She loses to Angie Kerber, who, you know, she's a Grand Slam champion. She's won Wimbledon before, so that was going to be a tough test for her, and it's a learning experience. You know, you don't just all of a sudden arrive on the scene, no matter who you are. You're going to have your losses along the way. You know, even in Federer's case, for crying out loud, he, you know, after he won his first Grand Slam, which was Wimbledon in 2003, and began just this unbelievable career. I think it was his next slam at the U.S. Open or something that year. He lost in the first round. It's a learning process for these guys. And Coco's going to be part of the conversation. Madison Keys already has been to a slam final, lost in the U.S. Open to the fellow American Sloane Stephens a couple of years ago. But also another American male, Sebastian Korda, who lost a heartbreaker today, a five-set epic to Khachanov from Russia. That is a brutal defeat, but I thought that was a big step for him. I mean, I think he's another one who's only 20 years old, getting to the fourth round of Wimbledon. That was a very, very pleasant surprise to see. But, you know, we're knocking on the door in American tennis, but still just can't get that breakthrough yet for that next wave of players.
Dan Grasso, multi-talented. The man does it all. Loves his tennis.
Love it.
And we've spoken about this a little bit. Dan, as you've mentioned, the NBA Finals kicks off tomorrow. Phoenix Suns, Milwaukee Bucks. Coverage 9 p.m. on ABC. And, of course, you could hear the game here on ESPN Radio 98.7 ESPN. We will have all the games here on our air. And we were talking about something, Dan, which I thought was interesting with Bobby Marks, about what this will do for Chris Paul. Now, this is, of course, Chris Paul's first NBA Final. He's been close. There's been teams that everyone thought he should have gone with to the finals. This is the first team he has a chance to do it with. And Mark J. Spears was on Sunday Morning, a show here on ESPN Radio, and he talked about what winning would do for Chris Paul's legacy.
He's already, to me, cemented his legacy in terms of being one of the elite point guards of all time and one of the, you know, top 75 players of all time. But that just gets him into a different conversation where he could call himself NBA champion wherever he goes. You know, we know he'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer. We know that his numbers are incredible, but this just puts you in a special atmosphere. I know it ain't 3 or 4 or 5, but just to put that ring on. I mean, if you thought he was emotional after making it to the NBA Finals, I can only imagine what it'd be like if he won it. You know, I talked to his brother after they advanced, and he had got his brother a championship hat and T-shirt to thank him for everything he's done, being alongside him the whole way. So yeah, I mean, if the Suns win, boy, just keep the camera on Chris the whole way. I mean, you talk about tears of joy, that's certainly going to be that.
Look, we talk about this in every sport. Alex Ovechkin will be known as one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. Mm-hmm. And the knock on him for the longest time was, well, he never won the big one. And he never won the Stanley Cup. And when he did with Barry Trotz, now, of course, coach of the Islanders, it kind of cemented his legacy as one of the greatest. And look, I think Chris Paul is going to go down as one of the greatest point guards of all time. He's called Point God. He's done it for such a long time. But I think winning this championship will be big for him.
Definitely more at stake for him in terms of legacy than Giannis, because Giannis is younger. He's going to have more opportunities. See, Giannis has the MVPs. Chris Paul doesn't have MVPs, but this champion, it's the only thing missing from his resume. It's the only thing missing. And he's already, as you know, you heard Mark Spears say, and he's right, the guy's going to the Hall of Fame already, first ballot, all those other things. This is kind of just the cherry on top. But you know, Anthony, we're so seduced by titles and by rings and by championships. Whenever we get into these conversations about players and comparing their legacies, it's always, well, how did they do in the playoffs? How many championships did they win? This is the only thing that's missing from this guy's career. And I said it earlier, I think they are winning this championship, and Paul, and for the turnaround that he's orchestrated with this team this year, I think this one's going to be extra special.
And of course, we will crown a champion tonight in the NHL. Oh, sorry. Well, game four of the the Stanley Cup championship in the NHL is tonight. That starts at 8 o'clock on NBC, Tampa Bay versus Montreal. Of course, we heard that the Tampa Bay Mayor Jane Castor suggested that the Lightning don't play their hardest tonight so that they can win it back home, where they could celebrate with their family. You know what? Usually I'd say that's pretty cocky, but the way this has gone, I think that the clock has struck midnight. The carriage has become a pumpkin. The Cinderella story's over. I think Tampa wins this and closes out tonight. A question for you, though, Dan, and this has some Devils connection. Why does John Merrill matter in these playoffs?
Think about it. John Merrill here. Wasn't John Merrill a part of the Vegas Golden Knights expansion team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals a few years ago?
He was.
John Merrill is a winner, Anthony. He's a winner.
Here's why he's important for this series specifically.
Yeah.
Since 1980, every Stanley Cup Final has featured at least one of Jaromir Jagr's teammates. That, of course, is John Merrill. And that'll do it for ENN on this Monday, July 5th.